Hello.
Hi, Rio. We are good to go.
Perfect.
All right. So let's start with your year of graduation, including if that was spring, summer, fall, and your major or majors.
Okay. It's been a while. I think I graduated, technically it was, I think the summer of 2011 was when I got my degree.
Okay.
And I walked earlier that year, so.
Gotcha.
And then for my degree, I got a bachelor's in music business and management.
Cool. Do you recall which track you did there? I think they have like a management track, entrepreneurial track, marketing track.
Was management.
All right. And what was your principal instrument?
I started out total percussion. And then after my first semester, I switched over to drum set.
Tonal percussion, is that sort of like xylophone?
Yeah, so it's like snare, marimba, and then I think like timpani or something, all the orchestral instruments, basically.
Got it. But then you switch to drums.
Yep.
All right, very cool. So we will get to your history later, but for now, tell us about your current job. Where do you work? What do you do?
So right now I am a corridor manager for Union Pacific Railroad, and the easiest way to describe that for somebody who has no idea about that industry is
That they're like freight trains, right?
correct, freight, and we also actually work with Amtrak, which is a federal line of transportation, you could say.
Right, because they own the trains, but usually not the rails.
Correct. Yep. So, anyways, what I do is I oversee between 3 to 5 dispatchers at a time, and train dispatchers, they oversee different chunks of railroad all over their territory. So, Union Pacific has basically from I believe the Mississippi West, and it spans from the north to the south all the way down to Mexico border. So, anyways, I have my own little corridor, which is why we call it that. And basically, I'm just a resource for my dispatchers. So if they were to have an emergency or if they need any advice on how to keep their railroad fluid or if they need certain contacts, then I am their person that will get that for them.
Right, because many times trains only have one track as opposed to two tracks, one to go
Correct.
east, one to go west.
Yep. And there's always those variables that we don't plan on, like emergencies, whether that's with Amtrak itself, with their passengers, or if weather occurs, such as washouts, which is something we've been dealing with lately, tornadoes.
The washout literally like damaged the rails then?
Correct. Like it'll literally wash out the ballast from underneath the rails, and then we can't run anything. And just a wide range of emergencies like that
If
we're
you don't
used to
mind
dealing with.
sharing, what is your corridor? Like what
My
region?
specific corridor. So I'm in the southern region. What I oversee is basically most of Arkansas. So where I start is up just south of Dexter, which is in a town called Poplar Bluff, which goes all the way south to Van Buren, or sorry, Little Rock. From there, I go up north to Van Buren, Oklahoma. And then I go as far south as Longview, Texas, and then over east to Shreveport, Louisiana.
Okay, so
So.
physically, are you based in Arkansas then?
No, I am in Omaha, Nebraska,
Okay.
and that is where the Harriman Dispatching Center is for UP. We do have a couple offices where we dispatch out of, but the other offices are really small, probably like 4 to 6 desks. My location has probably around 30 desks.
Okay.
So
And you said you supervise a number of dispatchers. We'll get into your full history later, but I'm just going to take a wild guess here. Did you used to be a dispatcher and then got promoted?
Correct. I got promoted January of 2020.
Awesome. So, how many hours do you work in a week?
Well, it kind of depends. Our normal schedule is three on, three off, and we do 12-hour shifts. Every other week, we rotate between days and nights. Right now, because there's all these vacations between our desk and another desk that we share a person who covers them, we're having to cover our own. So, right now, I am basically working four on, two off. And
Ooh.
yeah, with that being
Although,
12-hour shifts, it's not that great,
yeah,
but.
that's for 48 hours every 6 days. And then,
Correct.
so if 4-2 or even 3-3, that suggests that your days off are not necessarily the weekend, right? You don't get
Not
every
always.
Saturday off. They rotate
No.
through, right? So.
Yeah, so basically like every other month, I'll have like a full weekend off. Yeah.
Gotcha. And hey, could you sort of take us hour by hour through what a typical work day is for you?
I can certainly try. So, basically, I'll walk in, and what I personally do, since, well, in the COVID or not, wipe down everything. Just because it's like everybody's there, sitting there 12 hours. We don't get to leave for lunch or anything. We eat at the desk, we do everything at the desk.
Wow,
We're
okay.
there.
'Cause you have
There's
to be there in
somebody
case
at the
something
desk.
goes wrong, right?
Correct. There's somebody at the desk 24 hours a day. So I start off cleaning my area and then I log on. And basically, what I do is I get all my screens set up. So I work off of three computer screens at a time with just the necessary things that I need to look at. Also on my desk, which is
Can I
just.
ask quickly, like, are you seeing train locations in real time?
Correct. Yeah. So. The other screens that I have on my desk, which I have about 12 at a time, is all the territory that I am keeping track of with all the train traffic and where it's at. I can see if I have any maintenance on the tracks. I can see if we have blocks for any emergencies, so we're not allowing any traffic through there. I can also see what authorities have been giving to the trains by the dispatcher, just so I can kind of have an idea of what's going on with their fluidity and whatnot. But anyway, so I log on, I get all my stuff situated. What I usually do is first thing I do is check. We have this program that we use, and I won't go too far into it, but basically, it's a really nice tool to check if we have any trains that are late or if they're running ahead. Normally, what I check right off the bat is if we have any fuel risk. So, do I have any trains that are going to need to be fueled before they can get to the next terminal where they normally do? So, if I run into something like that, then that'll give me a chance to, get ahead of it and try to plan something before moving on. The next thing I also check, which is really important for our customers, is how long have our trains been stopped, or do I have any that have been stopped for more than 2 hours? If I do, what is the reason why? Because basically, stopped freight is us losing money,
Sure. So are
which
you
is
able to
something.
communicate with the engineers in real time then?
I could if I really, really needed to. I do have the technology to do that, but that's the dispatcher's job.
Gotcha.
And there's a lot of people who kind of get a bad rep of like, being a backseat dispatcher, saying, like, hey, you need to do this, you need to do that, or they just go ahead and contact the crews themselves, which kind of leaves the dispatcher out of the loop of everything. So we try to keep them as the middleman between us and the field.
Understood. But you're making sure in general that things are all operating smoothly.
Correct. Yep. So, and I forgot to mention even way before that. So while I'm driving into work, we normally take turnover over the phone. So the person that's been there all day before me, they'll tell me everything that's going on, if there's any train stopped, why they are, any working incidents that we have going on, such as car accidents, pedestrian accidents, do we have maintenance away, overstaying their curfew time, things like that. And just how things are looking into the future for my shift, like what they're predicting, which doesn't always stay the same, but they could at least give me an idea of what I'm walking into every day. So.
So can I ask, in terms of responsibility, like I'm just trying to get a handle on, I can imagine a dispatcher is, as you say, talking trains. Hey, is everything going on? Is there anything you need? So what is it that you're doing that the dispatcher is not doing?
Basically what I'm doing is like I so the dispatcher handles all the operations. They are actually federally regulated on rest because their job is technically safety sensitive. So they're subject to drug tests whenever, if we so choose. They have to have 15, 16 hours of rest before they're able to come into work. Stuff like that. So they are responsible for operating their railroad safely and efficiently. My job, compared to that, I'm not technically held to that same safety standard, but I am supposed to hold them to that. So I do my own testing, actually, when it comes to dispatchers. I make sure that they're up to date on their rules and that nobody seems under the influence coming in. And I'm able to report that to my boss if they ask. And that's the other thing. So my job is to also stay in the loop of all my dispatchers, of what they've got going on, if they have any issues or if they need anything from me specifically. And then if there's a certain problem that they have that I need to escalate to somebody, then that's what I do.
Like
I can
so let's
escalate.
say there's a washout. I'm guessing so the dispatcher reports the washout to you, and then you either call a repair crew or do you send that up to your supervisor for the repair crew?
Yep, so what I'll do is, yes, I'll call the manager of track maintenance, which is what we call them, and then they will dispatch their foreman to go out and make a plan to fix the tracks. So I do that. I get everybody notified, and then what I have to do is type up a report, and at the same time, I will tell my manager, who is actually a director, I'll tell my director the situation, the scope of it, and the severity, and then they will tell their superintendent. So it kind of goes up the food chain depending on the severity. But normally, like the vice presidents, they like to know anything like that that's going on. So it's just kind of a chain of command, I guess.
Sure. Understood. We have those at colleges as well.
Yeah.
In order to qualify for these interviews, one of the criteria you had to hit is that you enjoy what you do. So, what is it about being a corridor manager for a railroad that you enjoy?
Well, I like the type of work that I do. When I was a dispatcher, it was very frustrating. I'll be honest, it was very hard. And I think a lot of people kind of get slapped in the face when they enter that kind of industry because it can be pretty unforgiving with the type of responsibility you have on your shoulders. And on top of that, they expect you to be very efficient with your railroad. They want you to know your territory like the back of your hand. Like is it hilly over here, or what kind of crossings do we have over here? Are we going to block up a town if we stop a train, etc. So, and there's a lot of pressure from above that can happen, and it's honestly not for everybody. And I think anybody in the industry knows that. But for me, it was kind of like, you instantly get a crash course, and then it's like, okay, we're gonna train you for 6 months. The first 3 months is in the classroom, and then the next 3 months it's on the job training. And then as soon as what we call mark up, as soon as you mark up on a desk and you're good to work, then it's like go time. You just go, go, go. And that's really where you kind of learn, learn your own techniques and your own way of dealing with things, safely, of course. So, for me, it was kind of refreshing to learn something new, and then really try to perfect my own like craft, I guess you could say, but really my own like management skills. And with that, the past couple years or year, year ago, I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to bear a little bit more responsibility, but in a different way, which is basically what a quarter manager is. So I was able to move up, and when I did that, it was a totally different pace. Like, it's still stressful at times, but it was definitely different, like, in terms of the type, who is putting that pressure on you as opposed to what. I already knew what would. It was just a matter of, okay, now I'm gonna be working with different managers or different type of people that I wasn't before. And so part of that comes with meeting new people, which is what I like to do. And I'm able to, at least try on my end to create, positive relationships out of it. And so, and basically, that's kind of led me to what I've been trying to do this year more so is to network. And I think that's just been a really nice part of the job that's been welcomed with this promotion of mine.
Get it,
So,
like network, like getting to know other people at Union Pacific.
correct.
Gotcha. Great answer. By the way, quick side thing. When I put the interviews up, they go in sort of their own job type, but then within broader categories. Would it be fair to say your broader category would be administration?
Yeah, you could say that probably. Yeah.
Cool, because it sounds like it's not a, you have some job specific knowledge, but it's not like an engineering job, right? It's not per se.
No.
Gotcha. Very cool. All right. Well, hey, let's take it back to 2011 then. Although if you feel that your story has a logical earlier starting point, we can roll back to pre-2011. I'm guessing you weren't thinking railroad as you were leaving Berkeley. Could be wrong. Why don't you put us in your headspace as, Berkeley was wrapping up, both like and we'll take it one step at a time from there to where you are now, both what you were doing, but also like where you were at mentally.
Okay, so kind of how it led me to my current job.
Yeah.
I'm just.
Curious how you got from Berkeley to where you are. And when I say where you were at mentally, I'm saying, in terms of what you were thinking about your career.
Okay, yeah, definitely. So, basically, and I'll be honest, from the very beginning of my Berkeley, career, I was just like, I don't know what I want to get into, because the only thing that I knew about was either teaching or performance coming from Nebraska. There wasn't like a lot of opportunity come, like composition or EDM or anything like that. So basically,
And you did your full education at Berkeley. You didn't transfer in from another school.
correct. Yep. So, came to Berkeley, kind of went through the motions. I was like, ooh, I really like music therapy, but I don't really want to learn guitar or piano. And then I was like, well, there's music band, business management. I really like the business side of things, so let's go with that. And then eventually, towards like my junior, senior year, I was like, ooh, I think I want to be an entertainment attorney. And so I actually joined the Berklee Music Law Club that's in
Oh, yes.
conjunction with Harvard. And I
Cool.
did a couple things over there and I really liked it. But half of my teachers were also music attorneys. And not that it discouraged me, but they were all like, it's very saturated right now. And I was like, okay, well, what would be unique that I could do? And I just could never figure anything out that really settled with me.
Sure.
So I did my internship that's required with your major, and I did it in Worcester, Massachusetts.
It's kind of far.
Yeah, it was, took a train out there, I think like once a week with my intern partner who is also at Berklee. So we would go out there and spend all day doing things for our boss, and it got pretty tedious, but never to the point where I was like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. It was just like, oh, great, now I still don't know what I want to do out of this. So then I graduated, and after that, I had to move home because I had no plan. And when I moved home, it's gonna take a weird turn. So when I moved home, I didn't have a job, but my sister, who worked at a funeral home because she was an apprentice to become a funeral director, she was like, hey, we need a receptionist for a couple days a week.
But
Do you want to do that?
guessing this is older sister.
My older sister. And I was like, sure, I guess, because I need to start paying off my student debt here soon. And so I did that a couple days a week, and I was still kind of like, searching the internet for internships or jobs in LA or New York or even Nashville, which wasn't really a place that I was interested in going, but I was just like, I need to find somewhere to start. And it is very difficult to find a job when you don't live in that city. And I think
And if I
anybody
could
could
just,
attest to that.
I also can attest that it's very difficult to find a job, period, or was in 2009, 10, 11, or even 12.
Yes, it was so competitive, and it was discouraging for me. So, and plus, on top of that, when you don't know what you want to do, it's like, it's just kind of like
Been
blasé.
there.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, still looking for jobs, but, staying at home. And, eventually they were like, hey, do you want to work more days, but be like a funeral director's assistant? So you'll do more than just be at the front desk. And that is exactly what I am meaning. Just doing more there, like, in terms with the dead people and the services and the
Can I ask, like,
everything that encompasses.
was the pay decent at the funeral home?
Back then I think it was like $10.50 an hour.
I mean, that's okay, but that's not like great career, okay? It's, you know.
No, because yeah, it was just an assistant job, so it was kind of meant for probably kids who were still in college or maybe his summer job or something. But so I did that for a while, and I think it was like December or some January. My dad, who actually,
Sorry, December, like December 2011 or January, so like a few months after you got home, or are we talking a year and a half later?
let's see here. No, it was like a year and a half later or so. My dad, he's actually retired railroadie, and he was like, hey, they're hiring down there. Maybe you should apply so you can seriously pay off your student loans and whatnot. And I was like, yeah, I think more money would probably be a better than what I'm doing right now. And at that point, it was just kind of like music was just kind of off the table, like a music career. I forgot to mention that I was actually teaching drumline within the area. At like three different high schools. I was doing drumline teching in the summer, and actually an indoor session one winter, but it was never more than just a part-time gig for that.
Gotcha. Was that also, like, was that through a service? Like, were you working independently or working for an, you know?
Independently.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah, side thing.
So anyways, and then my dad had told me about the dispatching job coming up, and they're looking for people. And so I was like, well, I'll just put my name in, because apparently this is a type of job where, like, thousands of people will put their resume in, and then they only call in maybe, like, a couple hundred for interviews. So I was like, well, we'll see if I even get an interview out of it. And so I did that. They closed the job. And about a couple weeks later, they emailed me. They're like, hey, we want to set up an interview. Here are the times that you can choose from. And that was it. There was no more than that. So we did that. And it was like, I didn't want my boss to know just yet. So it was kind of, you know, doing that whole thing in secret. Mm-hmm. And so I got it set up. One day I went and did my interview, and then the worst thing was the wait of finding out whether or not I actually got it. And it was my first professional interview too, so it was super nerve-wracking.
Hey, can I ask a quick question, actually backing up to your job itself?
Yeah.
You said you're in a place with about 30 desks of dispatchers. Like, mm-hmm. How many are women, or about what percent?
Very little. So you make a good point. It's a very male-dominated field, and there's actually more and more women kind of, like, moving up and appearing. So I would say it would probably be, like, 5%,
5 to 10%. Maybe that was one way you differentiated yourself.
That could be, yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, they looked for bachelor degrees as a prerequisite. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, they weren't very particular as to, like, what they wanted you to have it in. So there's a lot of people I know at work who either have a bachelor's in nursing or athletic training, psychology, criminal justice even. And then here I am being like, music business and management. And I ended up here. So there's a lot of people from, you know, different backgrounds as well, which makes it pretty interesting.
Interesting. So you said you, sorry, I jumped there, you'd had the interview, then there's the wait. How long away?
Yeah. They made me wait 3 months before I heard anything back.
Wow, okay. And then you heard, was the hearing back a second interview? Was the hearing back, congratulations, when can you start?
Yep, exactly. It was congratulations, except we don't need you until July 6th. And this was like,
July of 2013, so about 2 years after you finished Berkeley.
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay, so you stick it out the funeral home until July, right? And then you...
Yep, that's correct. So I stuck it out. They all knew that I was going. I told them, you know, shortly after, because I had such a large heads up as to when I needed to start. Uh-huh. I told my boss, and he was happy for me. He was like, yeah, you know, you can go start your new, you know, big girl job and have a career out of that. So it was exciting.
Yeah. I know that sometimes, I remember once my wife got a job, you know, she was at a kind of low level job after college, and then she got like a serious career job, and her boss was, you know, like, he's not going to be hurt. He's not going to try to fight for you. He's just like, congratulations.
Yep, exactly. And I think, you know, the other thing is, like, they probably know, too, like, hey, this is probably going to come at some point, that this is just, like, the transitional job, mm-hmm. you know, before the big one. So, yeah.
So it sounds like you then, if I heard you correctly from before, You get hired, you're in a classroom for 3 months, and then sort of supervised for 3 more months.
Yes. So the way it works when you like actually start on your own after the whole 6 months of training is that you're basically being watched like a hawk because the rules, they're still pretty fresh in your head, and it's just a matter of like doing it over and over, practicing them. So
Can you tell me,
because
sure, I was going to say, before you go there, can you tell me a little bit about the training itself? Like, was this the sort of thing where you're in a class 40 hours a week? Did people wash out, or was it, like, how intense was the first few months?
Yeah, so there tends to be a lot of turnover from that, but in my class specifically, we actually all stuck it out together, and it was like the first class in a super long time that everybody passed together. But anyways, usually, so what happens, it's 40 hours, so Monday through Friday, we'd be in there, I think it was like 6:30 or 7 until like 3. And we were just reading books basically, and like we were all switching off reading all the rules, which comes from what we call the G Corps, the General Code of Operation for Railroad. So that is Union Pacific's book for their dispatchers to memorize all the operating rules that we need to go by. So it's just constantly learning that, and then at the end of the week, you'll probably have a quiz, and you need to get a certain percentage, which is like I think at 80 or 90%. And then every like 2 weeks or so, depending on the type of content that you're learning, you get a test, and it's pass or fail. So if you don't pass it above a 90%, then you're out of a job.
That's a little stressful.
Yep, so it's not taken very lightly, and that's kind of like the start of, the stress bubble that they put you in, so to speak, so that you kind of I guess get an idea, of how it's going to be eventually. So and there was this one, I think it's towards the end of the course where it can last 5 days. So it's what we called verbals. And basically we're put at the computer as if we're managing our trains. And we have somebody sitting with us that will throw different, situations and how we would approach them and handle it. And depending on how you do it would basically depend whether or not you can try again the next day. You had 5 chances to make it right. A lot of people passed, either day 2 or 3, but there are some people that would like, straggle until day 5, and you're just like praying for them that they're gonna make it through,
Yay.
and you're just nervous for them. So, but no, we all managed to pass that, and usually after that happens, before you start your on the job training, what we did was, so our main railroad yard that's pretty famous is called Bailey Yard, and it's out in North Platte, which is like western Nebraska. So we took a road trip out there, and along the way we would see different sites of like different types of switches, and we'd even go out and try to hand throw them ourselves, and different types of tracks and signals and etc. So eventually we made our way out to North Platte. Once we got there, that is actually a crew base, for where, conductors and engineers, they stay there for the night, and then eventually they will get called out any time of the day for whenever their train came into town for them to grab it and then take it to Fremont, which is like just 40 miles outside of Omaha. But that was like the next crew change point. So what we all had to do was stay in the hotel and basically wait one by one to get called out with these crews for trains. So we could actually get kind of the feel of what these guys go through every day, they come to work. So that was really cool. Unless you happen to get like a really big train that kept breaking down along the way or something. So, and I mean, that's, another learning point there, I suppose. But I think that was probably one of my favorite parts of the whole on-the-job training, was that
Nice.
part. And then, yeah, and then
Okay,
they
can I
didn't.
ask quickly, both from the training and then settling in, like, because you mentioned that it's maybe 5% women. I mean, Berkeley was maybe a third women at the time, but did that just sort of slide? Did you feel like you were treated differently? You know, did you think feel like that was a plus or a minus, or like that nobody cared?
Well, I think I was just kind of used to it because, like even in high school when I was on drumline, I was the only girl, and that was just kind of something that I got used to over time. So, yeah, but actually in my class specifically, they actually hired a lot of women as well, and I think they're trying to get more on board. So, there was probably like. Out of the 15 of us, I would say maybe it was half at least.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're definitely trying to spin it more as though, more women, more working moms, can do it, which is
Sure.
possible. So, it's just a matter of, having a solid home base first before, diving into something like that.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So then, you finish your training, you're then put sort of supervised. That right,
Correct.
so always look over your shoulder, making sure you're not making mistakes.
Yep, so for those next 3 months of on the job training, after you've done all your classwork and you passed all your tests, that's when you go into the bunker, which is where we're working, and literally inside of a bunker. So that and then we're all set with other dispatchers that we're assigned territories to. And we're being told, okay, you need to learn this. You need to learn everything about this desk. And then show us that you can do it. Once you do that, then you can learn another desk and learn more territory. And since I started, they basically, it's just been, how do I say? They've changed a lot of rules as to like how much territory a dispatcher needs to learn and how much time, basically to hold, I don't want to say hold your worth, but really, 'cause now they're doing that to basically say, okay, if you do this, then you can have this certain day of the week off every week. So,
Gotcha.
yeah, it depends on what position you're in, but if you're on what we call the extra board, which is basically you're working all the vacancies of the regular jobs, plus you're on call in case somebody needs to call out sick or whatever, So they need to be able to trust you that you can come in on any, given notice and work that job efficiently.
Sure. So that's where you started the extra board, which sounds extra challenging.
Correct. Yeah, it's probably like the worst position, or at least seeming position at first, but I actually grew to like it because you are more likely to have a weekend off or 2 days in a row off.
Okay.
yeah, and next to having a job, because the way it works is that the people that have been here been there the longest have the better days off. So it's all seniority based down there.
Okay. Gotcha. So then you did the dispatchery, so it's a little stressful, but it sounds like you were holding your own on it.
Correct. Yeah, I eventually grew my relationships over the phone, over the radio with a lot of the crews and the managers out in the field that I started feeling a lot more comfortable in what I was doing. Because usually, and I hate saying this, I know sometimes the crews, if they hear a new voice on the radio, they'll do whatever they can to mess with you if they feel like it. And then you're sitting there being like, oh gosh, am I doing this right? Or what do they mean by that? 'Cause there's also like a whole new language that you have to learn with it too, so it can be kind of menacing at first.
Sure. Great. And it but it sounds like so you do that if I'm doing my math right here, for about 6.5 years, and then you're promoted to corridor manager.
Yeah, and it really depends on the individual. How fast they want to move up, and 'cause quarter manager used to have a really bad reputation. Basically, and it mainly from like the type of stress that they were given. Like, there was a lot of talk of people being verbally abused on the conference calls of what's going on and why they can't help this or that. Even though sometimes you really can't help a situation. The days off, like I said, we're working 4 and 2 right now to help cover vacations of our counterparts. And people aren't really, they wouldn't be fine with that because they're like, okay, so I'm really not getting vacation because I'm just working those days, giving them back to the company. Basically.
Yeah, can I ask if quarter manager was a significant raise above dispatcher?
So the way my company has it worked out, because some companies have like different bands, like ABC. We go by different levels of like 1 through like 25 or so. Dispatching, you start out at like a 19, and then
Higher is better.
technically, yeah.
Okay.
So then when, for whatever reason, quarter manager is like a level 17, so it's like a couple bumps up.
Well, wait. But if higher is better, going in 1917 is going down.
Oh, I thought you meant the, sorry, I thought you meant the other direction. Lower, I guess. Lower.
Lower
I'm
is
thinking of the
better.
way,
So
yeah, I'm thinking of the chart at
you
work
would
that I look
love to
at.
be a one, in other words. And a
Well,
25 would suck.
yeah. Yes, 25 pays nothing.
Got it. So 19 to 17, it sounds a little like government service jobs, but with maybe even more levels. So a little bit
Yeah.
higher.
Yep.
Gotcha. And then do you also go up numbers based, or your pay is, I'm guessing, some combination of that and seniority?
Yes. And it's hard to say that because I know my HR, they really try to stay in tune with everybody individually and their individual like bonus at the end of the year.
Sure.
So it's hard to say.
Can I ask, is this a unionized job?
A lot of other places they are. Technically, the management jobs are not. But like dispatchers, like at the BNSF or the NS, they technically are union. But because Union Pacific, claims the dispatching jobs as management because they're managing trains, crews, etc., that they are not union. And there's been a lot of tries of trying to get the dispatchers as union. And the way to do that is basically you take a vote. And there's never been a strong enough vote to be able to get that ball rolling. So.
Gotcha. It's just curious. All right. So it sounds like, can I ask, what's the next step up from corridor manager?
Well, it's kind of hard to say because you could move up to, I guess if I were to stay in operations, it would be like a senior director. But really before that, they like seeing you go to the field. Literally. So I would probably have to go be either like a manager of like terminal operations first. And the
Okay.
closest yards here would be Council Bluffs, which is literally across the river from Omaha. Or I would have to drive out to Fremont like half an hour every day.
Okay.
But they like seeing people have field experience before moving up. At least from where I'm at right now, so.
Gotcha. Makes sense. All right. Unless you have anything else to add to that, ready to move on to the next part of the interview?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Cool. Next question I have for you, and let me preface it by saying there are no right or wrong answers. So these days, meaning let's say 2021, what, if anything, is your current relationship with music?
It's really non-existent, but I wish I had something going on at least right now. So I've had two kids since my latest one, he was born in November.
Oh,
So
congratulations.
thank you. So basically I have no time. But I actually I'm looking at my drum set right now. It's over in the corner. It's all set up. It's not tuned or anything, but it's there. And my daughter, she really likes coming down here and just banging on it every now and then. And I love watching her do it. So I really hope I can get my kids into it when they're old enough. And I actually tried with her already. I tried taking her to like a toddler music class, but she just really couldn't pay attention yet. So I think eventually we'll try again. We'll see if they like it. And I'm hoping to kind of revive it, at some point, but things are just pretty chaotic when they're so young,
No problem at all. And it, can I say, it's quite common among people who have small children not to be doing much with music.
Yeah, I could only imagine. Yeah.
All right, so my next question for you is that let's say, obviously, Berkeley is a bachelor's degree, and as you said, your job was bachelor's degree required, and they didn't care which one it was. So, in that sense, sure, Berkeley qualified you for your job, but so would a lot of other degrees. Thinking about your Berkeley experience and what you're doing now, being the corridor manager, is there anything you feel your Berkeley experience did particularly well to prepare you for your current job?
I would say definitely, because everybody knows Berklee is such a prestigious school for music, and that's I still have friends that I talk to or that I can reach out to that went to Berklee at the same time I did, and basically, learning how to network there while I was a student has helped me also, kind of like do that in the same regard, but in my current field. 'Cause back then it was like, hey, anybody know a piano player that can help me with my project that's due at midnight? Or, I need a recording made. And like me, like right now, it's like, hey, I don't know anybody in the intermodal department. Can you help me out, or can you, reach out to somebody and connect me with them so I can learn more about it, etc. So I would say that that's kind of helped me out in that way. But in a more serious note, I would say probably like the standard that I was held to at Berkeley, along with the amount of work that I would put myself through, because I when I went to Berkeley, I think I took like anywhere between 11 to 15 credits a semester at least.
Yeah,
I
sounds
don't
about
know
right.
what the average is right now. Is it like 12 or what's considered full time?
So 12 is considered full time, but I would say it's very common for people to be doing 15, 16, because I think it's like they charge you the same tuition for 16 credits as for 12. So for that
Okay.
reason, a lot of people end up doing 16.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, so back then I was really cramming it in compared to my peers, and I actually finished a semester early doing that.
Cool.
So the amount of workload that I put on myself really kind of, buckled me down. I learned, my studying habits, what I need to do, what works, what doesn't work. And not just, eating down, information and then regurgitating it later for a test. It's retaining it. So I think I kind of credit Berkeley for helping me do that when it came to like things that were so foreign to me that I didn't learn in high school before coming, like ear training, theory, music history, stuff like that. And so, like I said, when I started at Union Pacific as a dispatcher, you go through your 6-month, crash course of, hey, here's the railroad and this is what we do. And, the constant tests of either you still have a job or don't. I think that kind of work ethic that I built as a college student, as well as, handling the stress,
sure,
kind of prepared me for this in the best way possible.
No, that's great. That's great. Okay, well, hey, let's turn that question around now. Because Berkeley gives one degree, the Bachelor's of Music, you went there knowing that, and frankly, you've landed in a very good career. But all that said, when you look back at your Berkeley education, is there anything where you say, hey, it would have been really useful to have learned this while I was at Berkeley, and they could have taught it to me, and they didn't? Anything missing or incomplete in your education?
In terms of my degree specifically? Or just like the...
Well, I'm saying like you went to the point is that like maybe you'd say, well, sure, it would have been nice to learn a little bit of mechanical engineering to work at a railroad, to which I'd say you went to Berkeley and it gives a bachelor's of music, so you can't reasonably expect them to teach mechanical engineering. On the other hand, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Maybe there's something where you feel like a music business major plausibly could have learned this in a, slightly better version of Berkeley. And
gotcha.
What's the this, right?
Okay. I really don't have much criticism for that because I feel like Berkeley, because when I was hired on, I basically said, well, my degree is like a business degree. It's just based around like the music industry and whatnot. And they were like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So, I did learn, marketing and accounting and, administration and even law. Well, when I did music law, I thought that was really interesting. I'm sure they still do it for the business degree, but they made us take a class on Microsoft Excel.
Mm-hmm.
That has been like the one thing that I use every day at work, and the tips and tricks that I use from that class, I still like it, very, very useful. So I really can't think of anything
right.
that I
you
was
know,
like, oh,
it's
I wish
okay.
I would have known.
You're not the first person to say like, it's all good. We're good. Another satisfied customer. Great.
Yeah.
Okay, so next question for you is, okay, it sounds like you, sort of tread water, did little things for a year and a half or so, and then, I guess your family, at least your father wasn't in the railroad and in a position to give you a job, but he had that familiarity with it, and that sort of gave you a direction. You just sort of kept going with it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of folks either right out of college maybe haven't found that direction yet, and there's also people maybe like you who are staring out into the world, in their last year at Berkeley and being like, well, oh my God, what am I going to do next?
Right.
For either or both of those groups, what advice do you have?
I would just say to be open. Don't feel like you need to, go after one specific thing. If you have multiple interests, feel free to, dabble through all of them first before coming to a decision. And the other thing is, don't feel like you have to please other people and do the type of work that they want you to do if you don't want to do it, or if you know that it's not going to make you happy. I think that's also something else that people tend to fall into when they're not able to, you know, find something for themselves that they enjoy. So I think that's the biggest thing that I learned and that I would highly suggest is to just, you know, keep your sights open and don't give up. And, you know, things probably will take time for you to realize, hey, I think I'm settled into what I'm doing, or, you know, I think I found something that I can see myself doing until I need to retire, or, you know, don't retire, whichever. So yeah, because I think that was my whole life lesson that I learned after Berkeley.
Sure. That's great. And to focus in a little bit, as noted earlier, you're my 193rd interview. I don't think many people are going to listen to all 193. But hey, guess what? A little career fairy gets his or her wings every time I speak to someone in a new career. And I've definitely not spoken with actually any railroad employees before.
Hey.
So who's listening to this interview? Someone who might be saying, huh, working with a railroad or work as a dispatcher or you know, corridor manager, event, you know, one promotion later. Like, this seems like a career with real potential here. So let's say for someone who's looking at what you do and is thinking like, hey, yeah, maybe that could be a cool career. What specific advice do you have for them?
Well, so people who do come into this career often find that they're making a lot more than the average person probably at first. And then there's the potential to make more, obviously, later on. And I've ran into a lot of people that I've worked with and then eventually quit. If it's not working for you, you know, don't be discouraged, because it is a very, very rough field of work to get into at times. In fact, I don't have an acronym for UP, but a lot of people say that the BNSF stands for Better Not Start a Family.
Like, when you say rough to get into, you just mean like a stressful job.
Yeah. And on top of the type of work that you're doing, it's the type of hours that you work. So you could be working one of three shifts, morning, afternoon, or, you know, overnights. And so it can be, you know, physically draining too at times. If you've had a really stressful night, a lot of people walk out of the building and they can't remember where they parked. You know, it's just, it can be like that. Or, you know, you've had your radios and your phones going off all day that you didn't get to eat lunch. It happens sometimes. So
can I ask, if you don't mind, because you mentioned having a couple small kids and a very stressful job with bouncy hours, are you married? And if so, how do you make it work? And if not, how do you make it work?
Well, I am. I'm married, and luckily my husband works fairly normal hours. He works 8 to 5. I should preface, he's also a funeral director, which is how I met him in my previous job.
Okay.
So he does that Monday through Friday, and then every other weekend he works. But he used to be on call at night, and when he did that, I actually had a set schedule as a dispatcher. So at least I was home, because I had worked 2 to 10. So at least I was home by 10:30 at night, and if he got called out, then he could go. So it was basically like us trading responsibility in terms of like the responsibility load of our job. So he went to a different funeral home, and now he's just straight 8 to 5, doesn't have to worry about being gone at night. So with him having that solid schedule and being here at night, that allowed me to take the promotion at work so that I could work days and nights every other week.
Sure.
On my 12-hour shift. So.
Got it. Sounds like you get to do a bunch of logistics at home as well as at work.
Oh, yeah. 24/7.
All right, so, hey, I have just one other question for you, Rio, which is, You have the mic. Is there anything we missed or anything else you'd like to say?
First of all, I appreciate you reaching out to me and setting up this interview. I was really surprised because I had actually just taken a social media chair elect position in one of these employee groups that I'm in at work. And with that, I was given like the logins to all of our social media, so like Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And I was like, well, crap, I haven't been in my LinkedIn since college. So I actually went in and, you know, kind of cleaned that up this past week or so. And then you reached out and I was like, oh, it's like it's meant to be. So,
oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So I appreciate you reaching out and, you know, talking to me about it, because I know it's something that like even I after Berkeley was just kind of like, you know, what if I really don't, you know, do something with music? Like, it almost made me feel guilty, you know, of going to Berkeley and getting that type of education that so many people would just kill for. But for me, you know, like I said before, I was still able to learn different skills at Berkeley, yet apply them to my field now. So I don't feel so much as like, oh, it's a wasted degree or I have a wasted education. I don't think so. You know, I feel like I was able to get something out of it. I do have that accreditation that I went there and I'm proud of it. I'm proud of what I've done. And, you know, I'm proud to call Berkeley my alma mater and proud to be an alumni. And I'm really wanting to come back to Boston once things kind of settle down with COVID, you know, and bring my kids and show them where I went, my husband too, because he's never been out there. So,
and we have a skyscraper now. You graduated right before that thing went up.
Oh yeah, I remember when that was being built, and I went to that cafeteria once before I left. It was pretty cool. But yeah, no, I need to come back, and I need to come back and see a lot of my old teachers and stuff like that. So.
Well, that sounds great, Rio. Well, thank you so much for making the time to have this happen. Look for a message from me on LinkedIn in the very, very near future.
Okay.
And have a lovely evening.
All right. Thanks so much. You too.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.